In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
I just want to give God the glory. His people have rallied, and you are a strong people. We serve a living God who knows exactly where each and every one of us is at. Just keep on pressing.
That's Kim Davis. She's been much in the news because of a short time spent in jail on account of the issue of, well, it's religious freedom. It is same-sex marriage. It is the redefinition of marriage, all kind of encapsulated into one news story. And it's not the only story that's being told along the same lines. It may not be someone who is a public servant. It may be someone who is a private citizen or a private business person who finds himself, in terms of religious liberty and free exercise of religion, running afoul of our government now, especially since the decision came down from the Supreme Court that same-sex marriage is now nationwide. What is the future of marriage and the free exercise of religion? Joining us to answer that question on this Wednesday afternoon, Dr. Ryan Anderson. He is Senior Research Fellow in American Principles and Public Policy for the Heritage Foundation, based in Washington, D.C., and he's author of the new book, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. Dr. Anderson, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be with you.
With the Supreme Court decision, is the marriage debate effectively over?
Oh, not at all. For many people, the marriage debate is only now starting. They're only now really being keyed into the fact that a lot is at stake when the government redefines what marriage is. And so for many people, they're just hearing these arguments for the first time. Tim Davis, sometimes that'll be what prompts people. Other times it's been the baker, the florist, the photographer. As we see more and more instances of the redefinition of marriage having negative consequences, that's getting people to engage in this debate in a whole new way.
How would you describe the news story that now bears Kim Davis's likeness and image? How would you describe what happened or what's happening?
Well, I think Kim Davis has really become the image of what happens when we can't work together to find common sense compromise outcomes. There was no reason for Kim Davis to be in jail. There was no reason why the leaders in Kentucky couldn't have found a way to ensure that every legally eligible couple in Kentucky received a marriage license, but that no clerk was forced to violate their beliefs. There are ways in which you can accommodate religious belief on this issue without violating anyone else's rights. And it's unclear why the governor refused to call the legislature back to session to work out a compromise like that.
So if we're going to find a way forward, you make a comparison with the famous Roe v. Wade decision of the Supreme Court and what happened among pro-lifers with that decision and in the 40 years since. How would you make that comparison with the Obergefell decision?
Sure. I mean, that's the thesis of you know, that's the entire book is based on that thesis. And so what I do in Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, is say, what lessons can we learn from the pro-life movement? You know, what did the pro-life movement do after Roe v. Wade? The first is that they said Roe v. Wade wasn't the last word. They said Roe v. Wade was bad constitutional law, that it got the Constitution wrong, and it got marriage wrong. It got the nature of the it got unborn life wrong. The same thing is true about Obergefell. It gets the Constitution wrong, and it gets marriage wrong. I got ahead of myself there. So in the same way that the pro-lifers said the Supreme Court doesn't get the last word about abortion, so too we should say the Supreme Court doesn't get the last word about marriage. The next thing that I point out in the book is that the pro-life movement works to protect their rights. They work to protect their freedom not to have to pay for abortion or to perform abortion. And at the time, there were activists on the left saying that every doctor should have to perform abortion, every nurse should have to assist in abortion, every healthcare plan should have to pay for abortion. The pro-choice activists lost that debate. The pro-lifers won it. Right now, we see a situation in which there are some activists saying every baker, every florist, every photographer should have to celebrate same-sex weddings. Every religious school should have to teach and endorse it. Every religious adoption agency. We need to push back and protect our rights to live in accordance with the truth about marriage. And then the third thing that the pro-life movement did, and this is what I spend the bulk of the book on, is really showing that they bore witness to the truth. What they did was they found ways in which to make the case for life, and to make the case for life in a idiom that was accessible to their secular neighbors. So they used philosophy, they used science, they used embryology, they used ultrasound, they used natural law. We need to find a way to explain to our neighbors to bear witness to the truth about marriage as a union of a man and a woman.
I wonder about going to your third point first. I wonder if we haven't done that yet. We haven't been proactive, even though we have seen the redefinition of marriage in the works for, well, at least 10 years. What do you think, Dr. Anderson?
Well, I think conservatives did not engage on this issue in as serious, concerted way as they engaged, for example, on low taxes or free trade. This was something that we have not given enough attention to. And as a result, the media could unfairly present it as if the Westboro Baptist Church speaks on behalf of all conservatives. If you're a secular liberal and all you know is what the media reports, you think that the Westboro Baptist Church is the only rationale to be opposed to same-sex marriage. We need to make the argument for ourselves in our own voices so that people who don't share all of our worldview can at least understand why marriage has been recognized by more or less every society throughout human history as a male-female relationship. It's because it's built on truths about human nature.
Do we have to wait another 10 years for evidence to mount in terms of sociology, in terms of the rest of the social sciences, as to the consequences of redefining marriage?
Well, the social science will help confirm those consequences, but in chapter two of the book, I spell out four different consequences of what the legal redefinition of marriage will entail. I'll go through some of those quickly here, but the first is that it'll be very difficult to there will be no institution that even upholds the ideal that every child deserves both a mother and a father. Redefining marriage sends the signal that men and women are interchangeable and therefore mothers and fathers are replaceable. Right now, we know that many, too many children grow up without their fathers. How do we insist that fathers are essential when the Supreme Court has now redefined marriage to make fathers optional? That's one of the first consequences. Another consequence is there's no logical reason for the redefinition of marriage to stop here. We're going to see that the logic of love makes a family and love equals love and consenting adults should do whatever consenting adults want to do will lead to other new definitions of marriage. I mentioned in the book the word thruple, wedlease, and monogamish. Those are new words that activists have coined to describe a three-person couple, that's the thruple, to describe a sexually open two-person relationship, that's a monogamish relationship, and then to describe a temporary marriage union, a wedlease, instead of wedlock. On the vision that marriage is simply about consenting adult romance, why aren't those relationships marriages? There's a certain logic there. I then also talk about the consequences for unborn human life. If you redefine marriage, you'll redefine parenting and therefore exacerbate the use of assisted reproductive technology. And then also the consequence for religious liberty, the one that we've spoken about earlier, but the consequence here for professionals, for charities, for schools, and for civil servants.
On that point, your second point, but the point of religious liberty here, make the case that what we're talking about is, and I've become acutely aware of this, what we're really talking about here is the strict language of the Constitution, the free exercise of religion, and not simply some definition of religious liberty. Why do we need to stick with the way the Constitution articulates its religious concerns in the First Amendment?
Sure. What we're seeing simultaneously as marriage has been redefined, I point out in the book that religious freedom is being redefined. The founding fathers in our Constitution protected the free exercise of religion. And what we're now seeing is that some people are saying it's the freedom to worship. They're reducing the free exercise of religion to piety in a chapel, that you're free to do whatever you want to do Sunday morning inside the four walls of your church. But once you step out into the public square, once you step out into the marketplace, Main Street or Wall Street, you have to abide by the government's rules. That's going to be a problem here if they say that you can't live out your faith in your business, in your charity, or in your school.
Is this where Obergefell and its fallout differs from Roe v. Wade in at least one sense? And that is, you did mention that early on there were some attempts to try and make essentially coerce medical staff into performing abortions and things like that. But with the marriage thing, someone says, look, if you don't want to marry the same sex, then don't do it. There's your religious freedom for you right there. Is that all the farther it goes?
Well, and remember, they said the same thing. If you don't like abortion, don't have one. The parallels here are quite dramatic. It's just that because the pro-lifers largely won, and remember, it's coming up again with the HHS mandate, the consensus that had been agreed to has been undone because now we want the little sisters of the poor to be paying for health insurance that includes coverage of abortion-causing drugs and devices. They wanted Hobby Lobby to pay for coverage of abortion-causing drugs and devices. So unfortunately, you know, some of these issues have crept back up, and that people are saying, oh, you have a right to believe whatever you want to believe. You have a right to worship however you want to worship, but you have to pay for drugs and devices that could cause abortions, or you have to now help celebrate by baking the cake or taking the pictures of the same-sex wedding.
Is the answer, is the long-term answer to this, religious freedom restoration acts?
Oh, that's going to be part of it. Part of it will be the defense of these state religious freedom restoration acts. Part of it will be federal legislation and similar legislation at the state level called the First Amendment Defense Act. This simply says, it's very similar to some pro-life conscience bills that were passed, that the government can never penalize someone because they believe and act on the belief that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. So this says, in the same way that we had laws that were passed that saying you couldn't penalize someone because they weren't going to perform or pay for an abortion, so you couldn't say that that's the reason that you're losing your nonprofit status or that that's the reason why you're losing your medical license. In a similar way, we need to have laws that will protect people from losing status or being penalized or fined or coerced by the government because they believe and act on the belief that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. But we also simply need to defend limited government. One of the best defenses of religious liberty is defending the proper role and scope of government. It's only when government grows too large and starts meddling in areas where it shouldn't be in the first place that we see some of these problems crop up. So what I argue in Truth Over Rule is that we both have to defend marriage, we have to defend religious liberty, but we also have to defend a sound understanding of the proper role and scope of government.
Do we have to do the remedial work? And what I mean by that, Dr. Anderson, is the average person on the street has, perhaps at one time they had a sense that something was wrong when it came to the redefinition of marriage, but they've heard so many of the kind of, you know, the slogans for it, that they bought into those things, and they're not making the connection between an infringement upon the free exercise of religion and a redefinition of marriage.
That's exactly right. We have to do lots of remedial work. We have to, show people why the redefinition of marriage gets marriage wrong in the first place, and why it's not just about same-sex marriage. It's about 40-some years now of a cultural misunderstanding of human sexuality. Gays and lesbians aren't to blame for the breakdown of the family. It's heterosexuals who bought into a bad liberal ideology on sex and the family that came out of the sexual revolution. And so we have to do remedial work on just explaining to people basic truths about the truth about marriage, why a whole host of cultural shifts in the past 40 or 50 years have been problematic. We also then have to show how, regardless of how the state defines marriage, there is no reason for the state to be coercing people, penalizing people, harassing people who believe that marriage is the union of a man and a woman.
that we can live and let live. If you're in favor of same-sex marriage, bake the same-sex wedding cake, take the same-sex wedding photos. But if you're not in favor of these options, why should the government coerce you? Why should the government violate your beliefs?
Finally, then, Dr. Anderson, somebody says, look, Roe was passed in 73, or was that decision was made in 73. Four decades have passed. We are still fighting that battle with some incremental and some rather significant victories there. 40 years from Obergefell. That seems like a long time. That seems like hardly worth the effort. Maybe we should just give up now and find something else to defend. What do you say?
Well, I mean, I think you could only take that perspective if you think that marriage is unimportant. It would be like saying that we shouldn't have been working after Roe v. Wade to protect unborn children. Sure, if you think protecting unborn children isn't important, you could go that way. If you don't think children deserve both a mother and a father, if you don't think that redefining marriage is going and already has cause significant harms to the institution of marriage, then it's not worth defending. But if you think marriage is the basic institution of civil society, it's the foundational building block of a free and virtuous society, then you need to care about the future of marriage, and we have to work to promote the truth about marriage.
Dr. Ryan Anderson is William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow in American Principles and Public Policy for the Heritage Foundation, based in Washington, D.C. He's author of the new book, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. You'll find a link to this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Anderson, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time with Dr. David Adams. We've been doing a short series through the summer on whether or not the Bible supports abortion rights. And we've been through a number of the passages, most of them in the Old Testament. We'll go all the way back to the very beginning, Genesis chapter 2, and then a couple in the book of Numbers, wherein people think they have found a support for abortion in the Bible. Dr. David Adams, Associate Professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, will be our guest right after this.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.